This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Loaded show today as we will welcome on two of the authors of the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, which is out now. Earlier this week, talked to Matt Eumanns and two other familiar voices, you know, on this podcast feed, Wes Reynolds, as we did Wednesdays with Wes this past football season, and Jonathan Von Tobel. Both will be on the podcast. We'll go through their best bets. We'll also discuss the two conferences that they broke down as Wes previewed the Big Ten in the guide, and Jonathan Von Tobel went through the Mountain West as well as the Pac-2. So we'll get to some best bets, some differing opinions as well, and yeah, looking forward to those conversations here in just a little bit. Because we have two guests today, we will have a very short open, but I wanted to hit on something that moved the market quite considerably on Thursday, and that was a quote from Archie Manning. Archie Manning talking to a Texas publication out there, Texas Monthly, when asked about whether or not Arch, his grandson, will be at Texas next year. He said, quote, "Arch isn't going to do that. He'll be at Texas." And I think most, I can't say most, but a lot of people believe that Arch would stick around for another season. And the betting market was a little bit, I don't know. DraftKings is, I believe, the only book that I've seen, at least national shop, that has first overall pick odds. And Arch Manning was the favorite. And now, after seeing that quote from Archie earlier today, Arch Manning dropped to the fifth favorite. So right now at DraftKings, the favorite to win, to become the number one overall pick, is Drew Aller, plus 250, Penn State quarterback. Garrett Nussmeyer, LSU quarterback, plus 350. By the way, watch out for rumors, ladies and gentlemen, as there were some rumors circling that Garrett Nussmeyer had been lost for the year due to an injury earlier this week at practice. Those were quickly quieted by a number of national reporters out there, including Bruce Feldman, who said, the sources that he had talked to said that is not true. This is what Bruce Feldman reported yesterday being Wednesday the 6th. Texted an LSU source about rumors involving a supposed Garrett Nussmeyer injury. Quote, "Yeah, he's fine. These people are unreal." Jacob Hester also said, "Garrett Nussmeyer is all good. Y'all, you can relax." So there you go. Some interesting nuggets there regarding Garrett Nussmeyer's health, but he is the second favorite to be the number one overall pick. Lenora Sellers and Cade Klubnik both at 6-1, and then Arch Manning dropping to plus 950, which, once again, I would have never made that bet. Is there a circumstance that Arch Manning goes out, wins the Heisman Trophy, and ultimately is the number one pick going to the Saints where his grandfather played? Yeah, anything is possible. So plus 950, if you think that is a possibility, maybe you look at it, but I think everything that we've heard regarding Arch and the situation down there at Texas, there's a reason why he went to Texas. And I think his family wants him to have as many starts under his belt. Also, Archie was asked about the hype for Heisman. He said, quote, "People are saying he's a Heisman candidate. You're not a Heisman Trophy candidate when you haven't played but three games. It's crazy." So that I would pump the brakes on, as we've seen plenty of quarterbacks come in and win the Heisman Trophy in their first year. Would I bet plus 650 or 8-1 that I know some people that I respect, Eumanns has bet it, handful of other folks that I trust have bet it at a better price? I would not, but I understand the mindset behind it. If Texas goes into the shoe week one and wins and Arch looks the part, what does that number ultimately look like? But a couple of things interesting today. We'll dive into some of the line moves. I know you guys love line moves when I talk line moves here on the show. I did see one that was interesting to me today. South Florida getting some love in the betting market for their week one showdown against Boise State. And we'll talk about Boise State a little bit later on in the podcast. But I wanted to hit on this, not a best bet just yet, but I am definitely eyeing this one up. The Sunday night down in Miami, I will be in attendance, Notre Dame and Miami. Right now, a little love coming into the betting market on Miami. Number sits at 2 at Circa and handful of other shops. 2.5 still out there at DraftKings. It was 3 for a little bit of the offseason, but I'm staring long and hard at this total of 54.5. And I think when you look at both of these teams, and especially Notre Dame, what they will probably want to do with a unknown commodity at quarterback, not all in all like was last year. Last year was a dead under game. I was kind of surprised that the number was as high as it was, and ultimately Notre Dame won that game 23-13, and the under came home with ease. But Notre Dame has really good running backs. When you look at Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, Aeneas Williams, you have a quarterback, whether it be CJ Carr or Kenny Minchie, it feels like it's a true two-horse race down there. It's not just, you know, being put out there for competitive sake. I think it really is a true competition. I'll take the coaching staff at its word. But I look at Notre Dame's defense and listening to reports out of camp and hearing folks like Pete Sampson and others who cover the team, the depth on this defensive line seems to be very impressive. There's a lot of excitement regarding the linebacker core that the Irish have, with Drake Bowen leading the way, Jalen Snead. They do lose Jack Kaiser, who is certainly a guy that was kind of a fixer on the field. And then you look at the secondary, and they lose a guy like Benjamin Morrison, who was a draft pick by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But you got to remember, he got hurt in October, and Leonard Moore stepped in and was better than Benjamin Morrison, as crazy as that sounds. Christian Gray, the guy who made the big interception in the Orange Bowl against Penn State. Now, he was picked on quite a bit against USC before making the interception, returning 100-plus yards against the Trojans. They go to the transfer portal. They get someone like Devontae Smith to be their starting nickel. The safety position loses a ultra-productive guy in Xavier Watts, but there's excitement regarding the Virginia Tech transfer and Jalen Stroman, as well as Luke Talich. And then up front on both sides, you know, both offensive and defensive lines, it feels like the strength of this game is going to be in the trenches, and Miami very well could have a better trench warfare, so to speak, than the Irish in this one. So with a bunch of wide receivers being replaced at Miami, with an uncertainty at the quarterback position, does Notre Dame kind of keep it vanilla in the opener against Miami? 54.5 is certainly something I'm keeping a close eye on. Will a book go to 55? I don't know. There's an offshore at 53.5, so maybe it's trending that way. But I think under in Notre Dame-Miami is certainly the look for me. And I know Chris Felica, the Bear, was on this podcast, what was it, a couple months ago, and said he liked the under in this one. So haven't bet it yet, but it is on the monitor, on the radar, not the monitor, on the radar to ultimately be a best bet for me in week number one. Hey, just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Let's keep those 5-star reviews coming in. It's been awesome to see. Appreciate all the feedback. As I said on Wednesday's podcast, we'll have at least 2 episodes for you every week leading up to the season. And then once the season is here, 3 episodes every week here in your feed to break down all of the contests that are going on. The Thursday podcast that I know you guys like so much, I love doing it as well with Matt Eumanns. And a reminder, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast is out right now. $9.99. You can get your hands on this bad boy, and you get a month of VSiN Pro Access to check out what we have to offer. So head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe to see all the offers that we have. We've got a bunch of other offers, but if you just want to dip your toe in and see the College Football Betting Guide, the NFL Betting Guide, and a month of all of our content leading up to the start of the season, just $9.99. So check it out over there at VSiN.com. All right, enough of me blabbering. Let's hear from Wes Reynolds and Jonathan Von Tobel. Wes will be up first, talking Big Ten, then JVT breaking down the Mountain West. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, the one and only Indiana Hoosier great Wes Reynolds joins the show now, and he wrote up the Big Ten for the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, which is a bear of a proposition. 18 teams in that conference, so essentially you're writing up two conferences. So we'll dive into that, a couple of best bets, and one best bet that I'm going to save for last that I'm curious his thought process, because it might push me over the edge on a best bet as well. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But Wes Reynolds, fresh off of a playoff appearance for his alma mater, you still flying cloud, you know, as high as the clouds, Mr. Reynolds, when it comes to your beloved Indiana Hoosiers?
Maybe just below the clouds here, Tim. You referred to me as Indiana Hoosier great. I'll settle for Indiana Hoosier adequate. And that's how I kind of felt about the Indiana football program. I was like, you know what, man? Can we just get to like where like Iowa is, which is what the former AD Fred Glass once told me and a gaggle of other Hoosier fans and alums. We want to get this to an Iowa level, you know, or winning 8-9 games. And then they win 11 and go to the college football playoff before it ended in South Bend in late December. But I think the Hoosiers, this football program, the baseline has now been raised, Tim. Like, yeah. Now it's not like, well, we got to win that bucket game to get to six wins and get in the, in the Motor City Bowl or something. You know, I think the goals and the aspirations are a lot more lofty thanks to Coach Cignetti and his staff he's brought in from James Madison. The NIL commitment has dramatically improved under Cignetti. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see what this team can be.
Well, I was going to start with Penn State, but we're already talking Indiana. So I'll ask you the question. Did Indiana upgrade a quarterback this offseason?
I think they did from an athletic standpoint, and that's no shade on Curtis Rourke, who I thought was great for Indiana, despite the fact that he had some injuries. He was on a bad ACL, on a bad knee for a decent amount of the year, and then the thumb injury he got late in the season. But he played well, but he wasn't as mobile as I thought, and that was because of the knee. But this is a guy that did get drafted by the 49ers, you know, third day of the draft, but still drafted in the NFL. So he did well for his 1 year. No shade on Curtis Rourke. But Fernando Mendoza, I do think, is a higher level talent and has a higher ceiling. He's a big kid with a really strong arm, and he's more mobile than you think he is. And so I think, you know, he could be a little bit of a threat in the running game. Maybe Mike Shanahan will put some wrinkles in that offense and let him run a little bit, even though he's going to make his money with his arm. But what I'm really happy for Fernando Mendoza for is that he's behind, I think, a really good offensive line. This is the best offensive line Indiana has probably had in a long time. Bob Bostad, the coach of the offensive line, he was, by the way, the only holdover from the Tom Allen staff. So he was at Wisconsin for many years, had a lot of great offensive lines up there in Madison, and he's got one here because if you watch Fernando Mendoza when he was at Cal, that kid was running for his life the last couple of years. He was sacked over 60 times and just a bad offensive line. So he's going to like, I think, having cleaner pockets here in Bloomington. So I'm excited. I talked to a friend of mine that did get to see them a little bit in the summer camp here and said, man, this guy's got a really strong arm. Like, he was amazed. It was like, okay, this guy might be as good as advertised. He's one of the top transfer portal quarterbacks. And I think you're going to see that bear fruit this season.
You know, win total sits at 8.5. It's plus money to the over at a number of shops. I think plus 120 at Circa, plus 115 at DraftKings. They're going to go 3-0 in the non-con. You know, September 20th, man, you know, we can joke all we want, but Wes, that is a massive game for the college football playoff. Illinois versus Indiana in Bloomington. I think look-ahead lines are somewhere around 3 in favor of the Hoosiers. At Iowa, at Oregon, you go to Penn State, and you host Wisconsin. So 8.5 feels about accurate. I think 8-4, 9-3 seems about right. Did you end up betting anything on your Hoosiers?
I did not. For the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, we had to kind of give like a prediction or at least a lean, if not a bet, on every single team we previewed in the conference. So I went over 8.5. I did not bet that. I think that looks absolutely right here this season because – look, you know what? Sometimes to get over a certain hurdle in a win total, you might need a break. And the schedule, while I think is manageable, you still got to go to Iowa. you still got to go to Oregon and you still got to go to Penn State. All the home games, I think, are winnable, and they're going to be favorites, even though Illinois, like you said, that 9-20 game, maybe Illinois comes in 3-0 if they don't slip up at Duke. Manny Diaz's club was pretty good in his first year down there, but Indiana's non-conference, that's been much discussed, and Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, Indiana State, no real roadblocks there. And when you're trying to build a program, and you're trying to build back-to-back and consistent winning seasons, yeah, you're not going to go, okay, let's go play Oklahoma or Texas A&M on the road when you're in your second year under this new regime. So that's why you have a pretty easy non-conference. But I think that looks right, Tim. And the Illinois team, they're getting a lot of hype because they have a lot of returners. But keep in mind, that Illinois team, they won a lot of close games last year. They were 5-1 in one score games, won five games as outright underdogs, easily went over the total, ended up winning 10 games when you include that bowl game. So I don't know. I think maybe there's a little bit more hype on Illinois than there should be. But that, nevertheless, that 9-20 game is absolutely huge in Bloomington.
Well, we'll get to Illinois here in just a moment because they are a fascinating team. We talked to Humans in the most recent episode, and he did not have Illinois in his top 30 of his power ratings. So we'll see ultimately if Illinois is one of those overhyped teams. The coaches poll had them sitting in the top 15. But I want to start on top, and that's Penn State. And we're going to talk more Penn State with JVT as he's going to join the podcast a little bit later on here, Wes. This is, I don't know if polarizing is the right term for Penn State because they're good. They're borderline great. We know that they are expected to be in the playoff. They won two playoff games a year ago. And amongst Clemson and, you know, that's pretty much it. Maybe LSU, if you want to throw in there, they have that veteran quarterback coming back. So I know you have a best bet on Drew Aller. What do you make of this Penn State team? Win total sits at 10.5, the highest win total in the country. A handful of other teams are at 10.5 as well. They host Oregon. They go to Ohio State. No Michigan on the schedule. They do have to go to Iowa, which I think could be a tricky place, and they host your Hoosiers. What do you make of this Penn State team win total sitting at 10.5?
Yeah, I think this is, if not now, then when. This would be, by the way, the 40-year anniversary since Penn State last won the national championship in 1986. And, you know, we deride, and I think somewhat rightfully so, James Franklin, big game James, in a sarcastic tone, even though he did win two playoff games, but they were against the Group of Five. They were against SMU and Boise State. You're Penn State. You should beat those teams. But the last impression we saw, of course, you were in the house down there in the Orange Bowl in Notre Dame. And they came up lame in a really big moment, especially Drew Aller, that turnover that led to the winning field goal that essentially sent Notre Dame to the national championship game and Penn State home. So you've got some motivation because you had to endure some pain and a little bit of embarrassment in that spot. So now you get a motivated team coming in. And I look, Penn State is all in, I think, in terms of what they want to do. You have Andy Kotelnicki coming in his second year as the offensive coordinator. Tom Allen goes to Clemson. Well, we just go get Ohio State's coach then. Yeah. You just go get Jim Knowles and pay him a bunch of money, fresh off winning the national championship. And the AD, by the way, there in State College, Dr. Pat Kraft, an old classmate of mine at IU, and he's a football guy. He was on the football team in the Hoosiers in the late 1990s. So they're willing to spend the money here. And they did so on Jim Knowles, the commitment to the NIL in terms of what they needed to do. I think they've got the pieces. They've got the quarterback, who I think is going to be in the second year with this guy, Kotelnicki. So you're going to see them run a lot more motion, a lot more deception that they couldn't really run last year because they had to rely so much on the security blanket of Tyler Warren at tight end. Well, now he's gone to Indianapolis, so you had to upgrade that receiver room, and they did. They got a lot of production. Hudson from USC, Pena from Syracuse, Ross from Troy. These are guys that were productive guys. So I think that receiver room is at least going to be better. We know the offensive line is good with four starters back. And then you got the best running back duo in college football with Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. So I like this team, and I still think they've got a lot of defense on the talent, despite the fact that they lost Abdul Carter as the number three overall pick in the draft.
Yeah, the two questions I was going to ask you, because much has been made about the additions at the wide receiver position, and it was vastly needed when they did not complete a single pass to a wide receiver in the loss to Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl. Tyler Warren's gone, as you pointed out in the write-up, 104 receptions a year ago. this trio coming in of Hudson from USC, Pena from Syracuse, Ross from Troy, how good can this trio be out wide for Penn State? And for Drew Aller, I caught Drew Aller the other day talking on Big Ten Network, and look, it's all fluff time. Everyone's feeling great, but you can just sense a little bit of excitement in his voice to try to stretch the field vertically. So what do you make of this trio of wide receivers they brought in?
Yeah, they're productive. Had about, when you combine their numbers at their various three schools, 200 catches, 2,500 yards, 23 touchdowns between them. And Penn State, I mean, there's no real star in the crew, but I think there's a lot more consistency. I think you're going to see these guys be able to get separation. You saw it firsthand against Notre Dame. They couldn't get any separation at all. And they haven't really had a higher end receiver in this program since Jahan Dotson. So they've been searching. And I think that they've got to kind of buy committee, and he's got a lot of weapons. And with what Kotelnicki likes to run, if you watch his offenses, and I know you did at Kansas, a lot of motion, a lot of misdirection, a lot of deception. So I think Drew Aller is going to feel a lot more confident where it's like, okay, I got to find Tyler Warren because nobody's open, you know, so I got to go steady Eddie. And I think that's going to change the play calling too, because that's one of the things that I think set Penn State back. Remember that play calling in the Ohio State game?
Oh God, it was terrible.
They turtled up late.
First and goal from the one, get the ball to 44, man.
Exactly. And I think James Franklin, you know, sometimes he could be a little bit gun shy in the biggest of games. Maybe this year it's going to be different because he's confident. He's got a senior laden group and has talent really all across the board. He has probably the best pair of coordinators he's had. We know he's changed coordinators frequently over the years, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So I think this is their best chance to win a national title, probably since they last won one in 86. They had a couple looks in the 90s too with Kajana Carter. But I look at the schedule, Tim, three non-conference that should be absolute runaways. Then you get Oregon at home. That is a tough travel for Oregon. We don't know. I don't think we know the time yet for that.
No, it's a whiteout night game.
Oh, it is a night game. Okay, yep. So it's not an early game. So that does probably help Oregon a little bit. Then you go to UCLA. I still think UCLA is not there yet. Northwestern at home. So you should be 6-0 before those two massive road games at Iowa and Ohio State. But this schedule, to me, looks manageable. The only game that they're going to be a dog in is Ohio State, and it's going to be a small dog. You would think it's going to be like +3, +4, you know, going into November. So all these games are winnable for these guys, and I think Penn State, the expectations are rightfully high for these guys.
Yeah, right now DraftKings sits at Penn State +4 for that November 1st showdown in the Shoe. You did write up a best bet in our best bets portion of the VSiN College Football Betting Guide on Drew Aller to win the Heisman Trophy. BetMGM sits at 18-1. What was your process in getting to the window on Drew Aller at 18-1? And is there any concern with that dynamic duo of Singleton and Allen in the backfield that it maybe takes away some of the shine of Aller?
You know, there could be some concern, Tim, but I think you do get credit for winning. And I think Penn State is going to do a lot of that. I think his numbers are going to be improved. And I just think that running game and they're good receivers out of the backfield too, especially Singleton. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of them screen passes that are going to be taken to the house that, oh, by the way, those are passing yards and touchdowns for Drew Aller. So Aller right now, fifth, sixth choice on the board, pretty much market wide. I Arch Manning, probably the rightful favorite, but there's no clear guy. Like there's no like, okay, that's the guy to beat for the award. You have Manning, you have Nussmeier, he probably puts up big numbers, Klubnik, Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State, and then you have Aller along with Sellers from North Carolina, a couple others as well, just below in that 20-1 range. But I think Drew Aller, he's just going to be more confident with this offense, because keep in mind, they've had coordinator changes. Remember, it was Mike Yurcich was who he was with initially. And then Yurcich got let go. They bring in Kotelnicki. You got a motivated guy too, because Drew Aller against Notre Dame, the last impression, 12 of 23 for 135 in that interception with 33 seconds left to go in the game. So you have, I think, a more dynamic offense here, where I think that even without Warren, they're going to be able to make more explosives and more dynamic plays into passing games. So Aller, you know, I know didn't get the benefit of the doubt because the numbers may not be the video game type numbers that some of these other guys may put up, but I think you got a motivated kid who knows, okay, now is the time. So I thought Drew Aller 16, 18 to 1-ish range is probably a good bet. Obviously monitor through the season because these books are going to update these as we go. So you may get a better number. Like let's say they beat the hell out of these non-conference teams and he doesn't play a lot. So the numbers are down. Like he doesn't play a lot in the late third quarter or the early fourth quarter. There's a possibility you get some 20s on this guy.
Let's get to Ohio State because this is a team that we know the talent is there. And you could argue they have the two most talented players in college football in Jeremiah Smith at the wide receiver position and Caleb Downs at the safety position. But there's some questions for Ohio State. Now, they're coming off a championship, so they're riding high, even though I'm sure the fans in Columbus, who never seem to be happy, Wes, are still upset about losing to Michigan as a, you know, almost a three-touchdown favorite. But you have a question mark at quarterback, certainly, Julian Sayin. We had Bobby Carpenter on the podcast, I would say about 2 months ago, Ohio State legend who lives up there, and he said, watch out for Lincoln Kindholz. I don't know if that was more, hey, we're trying to put this out there to put pressure on Julian Sayin, but you know, at the wide receiver position, there's never going to be questions, but you've got a new offensive coordinator, even though Hartline has been there for many, many years. He had a crack at it, didn't go all that well previously. And then you bring in the bearded one, Matt Patricia, to run the defense. So are there more questions than answers, or is it just rinse and repeat? Ohio State is just that talented.
Probably a little bit of both, to be honest with you. I think there's less questions actually on offense, even though you have a new quarterback with sophomore Julian Sayin or whether Kindholz takes over the job. But their wide receiver, Jeremiah Smith, this may be, you know, too high a praise, but he looks like the best of the bunch. And keep in mind, really they put receivers in the draft in the first round every single year. They put in the Garrett Wilsons and the Chris Olaves and Maserati Marv. And this kid, 13, 15, and 15 touchdowns as a freshman. That's pretty darn good. Like, we're talking, you know, maybe all-time great in the program, perhaps, territory, like up there with the Chris Carters of the world. Now, he doesn't have Igbuka, another one of those first-rounders, on the other side. But Carnell Tate, I think, is a pretty good replacement. They also get Max Clair, the tight end from Purdue, who was one of the more productive ones in the nation, even in that awful Purdue offense, still gave you production. James Peoples and C.J. Donaldson, the transfer from West Virginia, I think are going to have good numbers. You do have three returning starters on the O-line. So my concern is a little bit more on defense where, look, these guys have five stars all over the place, so it's never really a talent issue. But I think that defensive line, because they were number one in the nation, number one, you do lose Jim Knowles, and you lose that entire defensive line, including Jack Sawyer, even though Bo Atkinson, talented kid from North Carolina. I do get a little nervous for him because I think the schedule, despite the fact that a couple of their toughies are at home, look, that's not easy to open up with Texas on August 30th. And there's some movement now. I grabbed a little bit plus three on the Longhorns because remember that game years ago they lost early to Baker Mayfield when he was at Oklahoma, when they were kind of in a similar year to this one where it's not rebuild but reload, but there's some question marks. But you know, I think Ohio State, they're still probably a playoff team because if you want to say they're a downgrade, that's still a 10-2 team. You know, probably at the bare minimum, you know, still have to go to Michigan, still have to go to Illinois. But I think that there's too many questions on defense. I still think they're a playoff team and what they're like minus $4 to make the playoff. They're going to make that, but I think they're not going to be as formidable up front. So you may be able to run on these guys a little bit more than you have in previous years.
So there are three teams in this conference, and then we believe it dips down, whether that number four team is Michigan or Indiana, Illinois, but that third team is Oregon. They go undefeated last year. They get a terrible draw in the playoff, and they get smashed in the Rose Bowl by Ohio State. And out the door goes Dillon Gabriel, Tez Johnson, Evan Stewart gets hurt in the offseason, so he's out. And, you know, a lot of respected people out there think this Oregon team could take a step back. The question is, where are the two losses? Because we know they go to Penn State, but do they lose to Indiana at home? Do they lose to Iowa on the road? Does USC or Washington jump up and bite them? So when you look at this Ducks team, win total sits at 10.5 right now at DraftKings, minus 60 to the under. What's interesting to note, now, once again, Circa is not a perfect book, but they are thought to be a little bit sharper than most. They're sitting at 10, minus 110 both ways. So a half win difference at Circa versus a DraftKings. Are you on the camp that maybe Oregon takes a little bit of a step back this year?
I am, but it's a small step back because I still think they're probably a 10-win team. I would lean under at 10.5 just because, you know, you're not going to out-recruit Dan Lanning. Very, very few are, and he's got another top-5 recruiting class. He does have a quarterback in Dante Moore who has at least been in the system. Sure. Didn't get a lot of playing time behind Dylan Gabriel, but at least has been with the system. Remember, he was a 5-star kid out of Detroit who originally started 5 games for UCLA in 2023. They've got some talent. They've got some solid receivers. They have Mekhi Hughes, who is the running back transfer, 15 touchdowns at Tulane last year. Offensive line, though, just one starter. Now, he's a Remington Award candidate, the center. So that's going to be a little bit of a work in progress, I think, for this team is really that offensive line. But they always have explosive guys at the skill positions. Defensively, I like a little bit more what they have coming back than they do offensively, because Dylan Tynteman, who is the free safety at Purdue, was a freshman of the year a couple of years ago. And then Teron Johnson at Northwestern, second team all Big Ten at corner. You've got some talent from the portal, and Bear Alexander, can he finally get it right? It didn't go right for him at Georgia or USC. Maybe third time's a charm here at Oregon. Jaden Kennedy, the linebacker out of Ole Miss. And then you bring some guys up front that are pretty solid edge rushers. So I think defensively they're going to get after it, but it's just the last impression sometimes weighs too much in our mind, Tim, because the first time I really felt like Dan Lanning and his staff got, you know, his team really got outplayed and his staff got out scheme was Ohio State, because he has losses where it's kind of like he went for it in a certain spot, didn't work out, and they took a loss, but you didn't really feel like they were that much outplayed. They were outplayed against Ohio State. They had no answers, but still winning the Big Ten in your first year in the conference, I still think is a pretty damn great accomplishment. They're going to be maybe borderline CFP. I would lean, if I was betting to make the playoff, I would lean toward betting the no at plus money. But I think it's a small step back. I don't think like it's a giant leap back. This is still a really talented group.
When you talk about lasting impression, Penn State, Oregon, negative, Ohio State, positive, they win the title. Outside of Ohio State, I said this to Humans yesterday, I don't know if there's a team that feels better about the end of their season than Michigan. When you beat your arch rival as a near almost a 3-touchdown dog, and then with a rather depleted roster, you go beat Alabama, an Alabama team that was playing Jalen Milroe and seemed motivated to win that bowl game, and you win both of those games. So the quarterback play, as we all know, was an absolute train wreck a year ago. And I think, you know, Michigan, if you talk about an Oregon and a Penn State and an Indiana, we won't really know what those teams are until late September. Michigan, week 2, you go to Norman. Right now, you're a 3-point underdog. Week 4, you go to Lincoln, and you're a 3.5-point road favorite at Nebraska. What do you make of this Michigan team? Win total sits at 8.5 this year for Sharon Moore squad.
Yeah, you know, we knew that they were going to take a step back when Jim Harbaugh leaves to go back to the NFL. They lose 13 players to the NFL draft, and 8-5, you're like, yeah, this was definitely a step back. But I think they ended the season pretty darn well for a team that couldn't complete a forward pass. And they really couldn't. You know, all year they were running the kid Orgy, who's more of a runner, and then Davis Warren, Jack Tuttle. So immediately you get an upgrade, not even talking about the superstar freshman Underwood. This is still a pretty damn good team with Mikey Keene, if he ends up being the quarterback, who was at Fresno, who was also at UCF. He actually did work with Chip Lindsey down there at UCF a couple years ago. So there's some familiarity. Now, the receiving core, largely unproven. McCulley, the Indiana transfer, he's going to have to be productive immediately. But they're still, Michigan, I think, gets back to their identity. They're still a smash-mouth team, runs the ball, good offensive line. Justice Haynes comes in from Alabama at running back. I still think the defense, even though they lost a lot to the draft, still really talented. Wink Martindale, they were a top 10 unit last year, and that's what kept them in games, because how many drives did we see 3 and out because they can't complete a pass at all? They could not throw the ball, and receivers couldn't get separation, and quarterbacks couldn't deliver it. But I think defensively is the stronger unit on the team, at least the more established one coming in. You look at the Michigan opponents this year, 8 of their 9 Big Ten opponents had losing records in the conference last year. So Going to Nebraska and USC is certainly a test, but you get the Buckeyes at home. You don't have to play Penn State. You don't have to play Indiana. You don't have to play Oregon. I think this schedule sets up nicely, and I still think at plus money, what are they, around plus $2 now to make the playoff, ain't a bad bet on Michigan.
So let's get to Illinois, one of the more polarizing teams this offseason. I would say them, South Carolina, in that ballpark of, hey, this is going to be, you know, this year's surprise team. Well, both were preseason top 15, so let's pump the brakes on calling them the next Indiana, who was, you know, north of 100-1 to make the playoff a year ago. But Illinois, as you pointed out already, they won 9 regular season games last year. They won their bowl game. They bring back a ton of production. Brett Bielema's walking around Big Ten Media Day down at Mandalay Bay a couple weeks ago, puffing out his chest, wearing some fresh Air Force Ones, feeling themselves. Win total sits at 7.5. It's juiced heavily to the over, minus $1.60. And you look at the schedule. You mentioned it. Duke is a tricky one, week 2. Week 4, you go to Indiana. USC, who we haven't hit on yet, I think is a fascinating game. You get Ohio State at home, at Washington, where we know Washington plays so well at home. You go to Wisconsin. Who knows what Wisconsin's going to be this year? Are you buying the Illinois hype? I think the answer is no, if I could read the tea leaves a little bit. Well, what do you make of this Illinois team?
Yeah, and I did bet under 8.5, heavy juice, the season wins at about 175 was out there. So shop around. Some of these places do have alternate win totals. I don't disagree with going over the 7.5, but they look like maybe a small step back. They kind of overachieved last year at 10-3. They look like maybe they're an 8-4 team. And I know they have all these starters back, and they have Luke Altmyer at his best season. The offensive line returns. They're going to be a little bit running back by committee, but I worry about them in the passing game, Tim, because 70% of the receiving production is gone. Hudson Clement comes in. He was the leading receiver down there for West Virginia. He's going to have to be the go-to guy immediately. And then the schedule, you look at it, it's like, okay, they don't have to play Penn State, Oregon, or Michigan, but they do have to host Ohio State. They do have to host USC, who we expect. How much in the wins, we don't know, but we expect that they're going to be a little bit better. Certainly, you know, having a quarterback that is a returning starter helps, and they always have plenty of talent, especially on offense. Do they have enough dudes on the defensive line? That's a question. But back to Illinois, you also have to go to Duke. That's not an easy place for them to go. Second week of the season, a lot tougher non-conference schedule, I think, this year, even sandwiched in between the two Westerns, Western Illinois, Western Michigan, and then having to go to Indiana. The Washington trip could be a little tricky at the end of October. So, you know, I know that there's a lot to like about this team, but I think this team did kind of overachieve. Like I mentioned, 5-1 in one score games, 5 games as outright underdogs. And some of these games were really close too, that, you know, probably shouldn't have been. Remember the overtime win against Purdue?
Oh yeah.
Like they probably had no business winning that game. The overtime win at Nebraska, winning on the final drive, like basically the last play at Rutgers. So they caught a lot of breaks last year. And look, I like Brett Bielema in terms of the culture because it's very Wisconsin. And remember, he got the Badgers the 3 Rose Bowl appearances, so he knows his way around the league. And at their core, I think they want to be a physical team and just kind of out-tough you at the line of scrimmage. So they have an identity, which is a good thing. But I don't know. I think that maybe some of the media hype on Illinois, just a little bit premature. It's trying to find that next Indiana. Maybe yeah. There's not a next Indiana, or maybe Indiana's the next Indiana again. I certainly hope so. But maybe it's not there this year, and we're searching for something that we're not going to find any treasure for.
It drives me crazy that people keep calling Illinois the next Indiana. Indiana's win total was 5.5.
Right.
Ago. Like, pump the brakes, people. This is a preseason top 15 team, according to the coaches poll. Say what you will about the coaches poll. I think it's a joke. But regardless, there's expectations for Burt Bielema's squad this year. Two teams that have the same win total. Want to get your perspective on both of these. I have a win total over on Nebraska. I laid minus 115. That number has moved in my direction, which I feel great about. However, get there first before we start patting ourselves on the back. And then USC, you know, I think you could say a team that kind of got bit a bit when you think about lack of luck. So USC and Nebraska, both sitting at 7.5, have a big game on November 1st that really could determine the win total for both of these teams in Lincoln. in November on November 1st, excuse me. So what do you make of the Trojans and the Cornhuskers?
Yeah, I lean your way on Nebraska at over 7.5, just because now you do have Dana Holgorsen, you know, who is questionable sometimes as a head coach, but he's pretty damn good play caller and an offensive coordinator. And I thought the offense got better, you know, a little bit later in the season when he took over the play calling from Marcus Satterfield, who's still, by the way, on staff there at Nebraska. And you saw the completion percentage for Riola go up, you know, from 67% to 72%. They're going to rely. Emmett Johnson's going to probably have a big year because he's a Holgorsen favorite. So look for him. Look for them to maybe run the ball a little bit more. Offensive line has some infusion of talent. Defensively, Tony White gone, but still think that this is a pretty solid group. And we've seen this with Matt Rhule before at Temple and Baylor. That third year is when they make the leap. Now, probably ambitious to say they're going to win double-digit games there in Lincoln, because this is a Big Ten and a heavier Big Ten. So it's a different, you know, different deal altogether. But five home games, avoid Ohio State and Oregon. Three of the conference road games, you look, Maryland, Minnesota, UCLA, probably all winnable. They're not going to have to backdoor. So I think Nebraska over 7.5, probably the right way to go. As for USC, I leaned over 7.5, did not bet this because the schedule, they do avoid Ohio State and Penn State. So they do avoid the two best teams in the conference, but they got to go to Notre Dame. They got to go to Oregon. I thought Jaden Maiava, and I'm not completely sold on him, but he's now the clear starter this season where you know, it's not, you know, okay, who's going to be our quarterback? So I think they're going to be better offensively, even though they lose a couple good receivers. They replaced the running back Woody Marks with Eli Sanders, who was a 1,000-yard guy at New Mexico, JUCO player of the year, Wayman Jordan. Brian Jackson was the guy that was the beast at the Las Vegas Bowl. My concern, though, for USC is what it's been probably the last decade, Tim. They always have the dudes at the skill positions, but at the line of scrimmage, man, they're just not the same. This is not like the Pete Carroll era where they had guys all over the place and they had NFL guys on the defensive and offensive lines. That's what keeps them from being, I think, an elite team in the Big Ten. I think they're going to be better. How much better in terms of the wins? I don't know. You probably see maybe a slight uptick because they did lose five games last season by a combined 19 points. They were 1-4. On the road, they're going to be favored probably in every single home game. Might be a pick'em deal eventually with Michigan, but USC I think improves, but I don't know how much. I would lean over though with this bunch.
All right, to wrap up the Big Ten, because I do want to get to a best bet of yours that I think is pretty interesting, and like I said to start the interview, could lead me to making this bet myself, because I've been eyeing it up and a couple of people including yourself have bet it, so I think I might ultimately get there. But I think there are, in this middle range, pretty interesting teams. You know, we had Jed Fish on the podcast, or I interviewed him at a Big Ten Media Day. There's a lot of excitement regarding Damon Williams. There's a lot of excitement in Iowa regarding Gronowski coming from South Dakota State. Wisconsin, I bet under 5.5, maybe the most challenging schedule in all of college football this year for the Badgers. Before we get to the perceived, you know, bottom feeders, Northwestern, Maryland, Purdue, in that kind of last tier, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Washington, you know, anyone jumping out, whether it be over or under on their win total view?
I'm with you on Wisconsin. I think that they're going to be improved, but you're not going to see it in the win loss. Cause I think the offense now they're finally, I think, getting back to like old school Barry Alvarez football where they run, even though they're going to run a little bit of more of like an option zone read stuff with Billy Edwards, who transfers in from Maryland, who's a little bit more of that type of quarterback. They're not running this air raid anymore, so that's a good thing. But the schedule, I think, is so daunting for the Badgers. You know, they're going to have to give Luke Fickell a little bit of time. But a team that you mentioned in the middle that I do think is going to be improved, but I don't know how many more wins, maybe at least one more win. I think 7.5 is the total, and they got a relatively difficult schedule. But I think you're going to see improvement in the second year for Jed Fish at Washington. It's not going to be like the Arizona leap because the Big Ten is a tougher conference. And obviously where he was at Arizona, the floor is a lot higher. Schedule's tougher too. You got Oregon and Ohio State at home, but Damon Williams, I think, is really a fit for the offense and what he wants to do. And we saw what he did in the Sun Bowl against Louisville, how explosive in his potential. And then you get Jonah Coleman along with him, who was a 1,000-yard rusher. So they're going to be able to run the ball. I think that the offensive line got to get better. They allowed 39 sacks last year, but they have a more mobile guy. This isn't Will Rogers, you know, who really I don't think was a fit for the offense that Jed Fish wanted to necessarily run. The run defense has to hold up, and that's why they hit the portal hard. They got guys from all these power four. I keep wanting to say power five, but it's power four really now programmed. So I think Washington is going to be improved. But man, it looks like a mild improvement to like 7 wins. But I think this team's going to be a lot better than we saw last year.
All right, let's end on this because Paul Stone, our good friend, been on the podcast. We all respect Paul. He put out a tweet the other day regarding Maryland under Mike Locksley and the struggles that they've had. Since 2021, Maryland 1-18 when cast as the betting underdog. The Terps figure to be the dog in all 9 of their Big Ten games and by double digits in 7 of those. Could be a long fall for Mike Locksley and company. That from our good friend Paul Stone. Now, the non-conference, and as I've joked on this podcast, Wes, week 2 against Northern Illinois is always a tricky spot, as we learned last year with Notre Dame. But you get FAU, Northern Illinois, and Towson at home. You'll be a favorite in all of those games. Their win total sits at 4.5, juiced to the under. So can Maryland, with some unknowns around that roster, and I thought Mike Locksley was very open at Media Day, saying he lost the team, he lost the locker room, things have changed. They've got a new OC in Pep Hamilton, a new DC as well. Can we find 2 conference wins out there for Maryland if they are to sweep the non-con?
I think we can, and I did bet over 4.5 at +110, and I know why it's going to look like a long season because of the numbers that you mentioned that Paul Stone tweeted out. They were 100th or lower nationally in both scoring offense and scoring defense, but you did kind of mention it there in passing, Tim. I think maybe Maryland is going to be a more professional operation because Mike Locksley did admit he lost the locker room and it was kind of ragtag. All these guys worried about the NIL and all that stuff. And Maryland has always been a pretty good – they've always recruited well under Locksley. I mean, mm-hmm. Keep in mind, this guy was on Saban's staff at Alabama and was one of the better recruiters in the country. Now you have Pep Hamilton, who – quarterback coach for Andrew Luck, Justin Herbert, Alex Smith, Brian Greasy, et cetera, et cetera. He takes over as the offensive coordinator, Ted Monachino, both college and NFL DC experience. So I think at least you got a more professional, squared away, organized operation. So that is a good thing. The bad thing is you're kind of trying to determine who you're going to play at quarterback. Is it going to be Justin Martin, the UCLA transfer? Is it Malik Washington, who's from right there in the DMV area, 4-star freshman that he got to stay home? They always have some pretty good receivers there, even though they got to replace Kai Felton, who was an all-Big Ten guy. Got to run the ball better, though. They were 115th nationally in rushing. The schedule, I think, even though they're slated to be underdogs in pretty much all their Big Ten games, you do avoid Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon. So that's a very good thing. And, you know, I think Maryland, the talent is there. They're probably, you would think they're going to go 3-0 in the non-conference. If they don't, then we're in trouble, and this is a loser, and then we move on. But they go to Wisconsin. Now they get their old quarterback, Billy Edwards, who transferred to Wisconsin, and then they get a bye week and they get 2 home games. They get Washington at home, Nebraska at home, and that Washington, we've seen that spot has been difficult for a lot of these teams in the West traveling east. It probably eases, you know, having gone through it for a year, maybe it's a little better, but if that's a day game, that's still a very hard travel for Washington. So that could be one that they could pick up. Maybe could win at Rutgers. I think the talent is pretty even on both those teams, even though Rutgers would certainly be the favorite. So I think you can find 5 wins. I don't know if they get to a bowl because they had made 3 straight bowls before last year's season. But I just think avoiding those elite teams, starting out with a kind of a soft schedule, maybe gives this team some confidence. Were they pulling upset somewhere in Big Ten play?
Yeah, and that Washington spot that you scheduled, we talked about that on the pod. It goes at Wazoo, home to Ohio State, and then travel across the country to play Maryland. Maryland will be coming off a bye. So whether you're betting them to win that game or just betting them plus the points, I think Maryland could be a pretty interesting bet there from a point spread standpoint. All right, Wes, let's wrap on this as we all put in our best bets there in the VSiN College Football Guide, and your bet has already moved juice, which is always a good thing. But I also feel bad. Like, my bet on Boise State, I looked at it. It was -125 when I wrote it up for them to win the Mountain West, and now it's like -150. So I always feel bad when we put this thing out and juice moves. But Army win total sits at 7.5. They're coming off of a 11-win regular season. Well, I guess 10-win regular season. Won the conference championship in impressive fashion against Tulane on a cold night in West Point. They did lose to Navy, and they won their bowl game against, Louisiana Tech, who was thrust into action because Marshall, their team, was completely depleted. But you look at this non-conference schedule, they have to go to the Little Apple week two. In the conference, they have to go to East Carolina. They have to go to Tulane. They have to go to UTSA. They also go to Air Force in that rivalry game. You like under 7.5 wins here. Juice varies. It looks like Circa, best juice out there, -130. Nationally, it looks like BetMGM, -135. Why ultimately are you going under on Jeff Munkin's squad?
Yeah, it seems like a pretty precipitous drop considering they won 12 last year. And I'm best in program history. Obviously, they're playing more games now than they did in like the 40s and the 50s when they were really peak Army. But, Jeff Munkin, terrific coach, but he's got to replace a lot. You lose Bryson Daly, the quarterback, who is the offensive player of the year in the conference. You lose Kanye Udo, who transfers to Arizona State. And you also lose Matt Drinkall, who is the offensive line coach, who's now the head coach at Central Michigan. Army, what they do at the triple option, they lead the nation in rushing damn near every year, or certainly near the top. And the defense was solid. And that's where I think they're going to struggle might be on the defense. Even though they don't seem to lose a ton of personnel, they were eighth nationally, by the way. But that defense is predicated on that offense controlling the ball with that triple option. Without Daly and Udo, I think that's going to be really difficult. And sometimes at the academies, and this having covered Navy and the midshipmen all these years, sometimes it takes a year for a quarterback to kind of get used to it. Even though you're in the system, the next guy in the pipeline, it takes a year to get accustomed to that offense and making those proper reads in the triple option. Then you mentioned the schedule, Kansas State on the road in the non-conference. You also have to go to Tulane and to UTSA, who everybody I think has in the top four of that preseason poll. And then you got a road trip to Air Force. I think Air Force, they had a down year last year, but they're going to be maybe the sleeper in the Mountain West. So that's a tough game for the CIC, the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy. And then you get Navy again, where I think they're going to be improved. Drew Connick's kind of newish wing T / triple option hybrid that he runs. And you have Blake Horvath, who might be the next in the great Navy quarterback pipeline there in Annapolis. So tougher schedule for Army. And I think a little bit tougher at the top in the AAC this year. So I did play under 7.5.
All right, we'll wrap on this because you mentioned Navy. I have no bets on the midshipmen yet. They are 5-1 to win the AAC at Circa, a little bit shorter at DraftKings +380. But you mentioned it. Blake Horvath, when this program has a quarterback, when you think about Malcolm Perry, when you think about even the year that I covered the team, Will Wirth in 2016, and then prior to that, Keenan Reynolds, who it was an absolute joke that he didn't get invited to the Heisman ceremony, but that's another discussion for another day. And you've got this unique offense with Drew Cronic. The schedule, very manageable up front, backloaded at Notre Dame, well, in November, at North Texas, which I think could be challenging, at Notre Dame, USF, at Memphis, and then the Army game, which is not part of conference affiliation there. Do you think this Navy team is worth a look to win the conference at around 5-1?
I do, and they're who I picked in the betting guide. I'm debating if I want to go ahead and make that bet as a little bit of a longer shot, but I'm big on Horvath. I think they're going to be really dangerous on offense this year with the second year under Drew Cronic. Defense, They don't have as much attrition in Navy. And I mentioned Army losing Udo to Arizona State. Like, that doesn't happen. You don't get a lot of kids transfer out of the academies because they're there for a different purpose and a different reason. And Navy keeps a lot of these guys. And you have all the parts in place. I think the coaching has improved. I think Brian Newberry's kind of figured it out after, a couple struggles in his first couple years, or his first year, really, And, you know, the coordinators, Volker maintained, I think, that high standard defensively. They were like 34th nationally. And keep in mind, they're a ball control offense. So a lot of these defensive numbers are predicated off controlling the ball offensively and just not as much roster attrition as you certainly saw with Army. And you mentioned the schedule. If they can get Air Force at home, I think that, you know, this team maybe could be 6-0 or 6-1 or 7-0 going into that tough schedule in November. So I really do like the midshipmen. They're not favorite. They shouldn't be. That should be, you know, who I've mentioned, the Tulanes and the UTSAs, power rated ahead. But I think there's value on Navy, and they're always a tough prep too, especially when you get a team like if they're, you know, a team is not on a bye week and has played four or five in a row. It's like, now you got to do this triple option and prepare for this unique offense. Navy is a tough team to prepare for. And that's why they win a couple games or two extra, I think, most seasons when they have a good roster like they do this year. And I think that's going to be the case. So I do kind of like Navy as an outsider to win the American.
Well, they don't play Tulane. They don't play UTSA. And their last conference game is Memphis on the road. So if you're sitting with a 5-1 ticket, Wes, you could start hedging out, right? If you don't like where you're at, Memphis should be the favorite in that game, but it won't be anything astronomical if you're looking at it from that standpoint. If you read Bruce Feldman's freaks list, number 13 is Navy's nose guard, Landon Robinson, three-time freaks list guy, as Bruce points out, arrived at Navy 6'2", 240. He's now 286. 61 tackles, 5.5 for loss, 4 sacks a year ago. I might join you. I might jump in. Circa, I saw 5-1. I'll look around, see if we get anything better on the midshipmen. But Wes, always great stuff, man. Always appreciate it, and love chopping it up with you.
You bet, Tim. Thanks for having me.
All right, quick break. Jonathan Von Tobel talking Mountain West and some Big 12 best bets. We'll do that next.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, the man, the myth, the legend, Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT, as you all know him at VSiN, joins us right now. You can follow him at MeJVT. Of course, catch he and Stormy weekdays on Money Moves on the network from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. JVT, you wrote up the Mountain West, a conference near and dear to your heart. But I want to start with a common bet that you and I have that you wrote up for the guide, which is the long shot of our hero. And I will give you full credit because you are the first person I ever heard speak highly of Devin Dampier. I rode the coattails of your love. Week zero, a year ago, you said, watch out for this New Mexico quarterback, Devin Dampier. And now, JVT, the world is about to know about the new Utah Ute quarterback, Devin Dampier.
I mean, I really hope he works out. He's a fun player, but you're right. You know, we've seen a little bit of him. And, you know, 2023 was obviously the breakout year. You heard reports about just like, hey, like this kid, he's pretty electric. He's kind of small, but he's very, very fast. He's a dual threat. And you kind of buy in a little bit and say, hey, you know, they might have something here. And sure enough, he really takes off from week one and onward. Obviously, I'm a big Dampier fan, and I am very excited. As you well know, you have a much wider depth of knowledge of college football than I do. But when you get guys like this who get a chance and put them in systems with much better athletes around them, I think that he is going to set the world ablaze in a conference that is very wide open. And with a lot of teams that I think defensively aren't overly impressive, he can put up some bonkers numbers after last year. For those who didn't really see it, the passing numbers can improve. 2,700 yards passing, 12 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Turnover the play rate was actually really good, only 2.1%. So despite the fact that he threw the 12 interceptions, he really didn't put the ball in danger at a very high rate. And then, of course, the rushing yards, 1,100 yards for New Mexico last season. Absolutely brilliant. How about this one? 54 missed tackles forced for the guy. Had 39 runs of 10 or more yards and scored 19 touchdowns. So if you're counting at home, over 30 touchdowns accounted for, well over 3,000 total yards. And then now in a power system like this, you got a better number. I have 60-1. I think you got like triple digits right on Dampier, but
100-1, yeah.
Yeah, 100-1. But if I'm going to be right and he's going to continue this ascension on a power team that could win its conference, which I believe they can, I think he's going to be very live to put those numbers up and compete for a Heisman.
You know, it's always curious too, because I wrote this up for the guide you did as well, Devin Dampier, long shot to win the Heisman Trophy. And when I was writing it up just a week ago, JVT, Circa was 85-1. And now it's down to 60-1 at Circa. So there's definitely some agreement out there. And I'm not saying that, you know, sharp guys are all over Devin Dampier to win the Heisman Trophy. We know that big numbers like that move very quickly when you get a couple of bets that come in. But I do think if you're looking for a long shot to win the Heisman Trophy, he's the type of guy that you would look at, as you alluded and broke down all the rushing yards and the fact that he brings in Jason Beck, or comes with his offensive coordinator, Jason Beck. And then let's remember this. He rushed for 1,100 yards last year, and now he's in front of arguably the best offensive line. You can make an argument for in the country. I think definitely the best offensive line in the Big 12. The schedule's a little tricky for Utah. They don't avoid a ton of the big boys. They get Arizona State, Texas Tech, and Kansas State. Get all of them at home, which is beneficial. But let's dive in a little bit more to Utah, because this number that you and I both bet is still out there. Utah to win the conference at 6-1, and massive disappointment a year ago. Kyle Whittingham at Media Day said, quote, "I couldn't stomach going out with that season." It feels like this is it for Kyle Whittingham to go out. He's really excited about Devin Dampier. I've been told that by a number of folks up there who, you know, cover this team. What made you get to the window on Utah to win the Big 12 at 6-1?
Well, I should be honest. It does start with Devin, right? Like, Dampier is a big reason why. One of the reasons why this team only won 5 games last year was their quarterback play was abysmal. In fact, like, I don't think I'm exaggerating here. Like, they've been desperately searching for quarterback play since 2023, when Cam Rising got hurt. The position has been an absolute black hole, a dearth of talent there. So when you kind of look around, that is the first one. Like, now you have a starting caliber quarterback, and you mentioned all of the positives. This is a team that has about 10 starters coming back on offense. When you talk about an offensive line that is relatively intact, the skill positions which are there, and those skill positions specifically at running back should get better with a threat like Dampier being able to run. This should be the best offense that Whittingham has had in a really long time. If you go over some of the last few years for this offense and you look at just the overall yards per play, yards per carry, this has been awful since Cam Rising's last full year as a starter this last two seasons. And I think Dampier is going to really accelerate that. And then on the flip side, Tim, this is a really experienced defense. I mean, this is a team that brings back about 7 or 8 starters, depending on how you measure returning starters. The production is absolutely tremendous in the front seven. And in a Big 12 that is not exactly rife with physical and strong defenses up front, I think this could make a really big difference for this team. And I also think I've been adamant to state this, because I don't know how you feel about it. I don't think the Big 12 is going to be a 2-bid league. No. I think they're just going to be a 1-bid league again. So I wanted to bet them to win the Big 12 at 6-1 as opposed to make the playoffs at 4-1, because I don't think there's a reality they make it if they don't win it. So I thought at 6-1 that was the better option here. But there's a ton coming back, man, and Whittingham's done less with more. Or excuse me, more with less. It's early in the morning. And I think they're going to be able to get this thing done.
Yeah, no doubt. No, I agree. And, you know, I think the biggest question for Utah certainly is playmakers at the wide receiver position. I had Brett Ciancia, a Pick 6 Previews on the podcast, and that was his biggest concern. And that's fair. They don't have what seems to be elite playmakers. But I think in a conference that they used to really hold their hat on physicality in the Pac-12, and that's what, if you remember back to that championship game in Vegas against USC, they just beat them into a pulp, it felt like, in Vegas. Caleb Williams also got hurt in that game, or a little bit nicked up. He still played. But yeah, I mean, I think it's 6-1 on Utah, trusting in their coaches, trusting in a defense led by Morgan Scalley. We ride together with the Utes. Before we get to the Mountain West, the conference that you wrote up for our VSiN college football betting guide, I do want to get to a future that you have in Penn State. And it's been fun to talk about Penn State this offseason, because I don't know if polarizing is the right word, but there's a lot of hesitancy because, as you pointed out in your first line of the write-up, James Franklin's struggles against opponents ranked 10th or higher and against the top five in the AP poll. But look, the schedule shapes up well for Penn State. They've got a joke of a non-conference. They get Oregon to come to their place for a whiteout game, which I know they've been clamoring for. Yes, they have to go on the road to Ohio State, but they could lose that game and still make the playoff. So as you dove into everything, why ultimately did you bet Penn State to win the title this year?
I mean, I value returning production. I value high-end returning production, and that's exactly what Penn State has. I think I said it in the write-up. If this roster was Ohio State's roster, this team would be favored without a question, right? But because James Franklin and his struggles, especially in big games against ranked opponents, you get this trepidation that you're discussing when you're talking about some of the teams and bettors that we speak to all the time not really buying into what this team could be. But when you have a two-headed monster in that backfield with Allen and Singleton, how effective that could be, rushing for over 2,200 yards last year, an NFL-caliber quarterback in Drew Aller, a defense which brings back quite a bit of production, but on the other side of – at the same note, Jim Knowles now coming in to lead that defense, which I believe a lot in Jim Knowles, I think a lot of people do, making one of your biggest opponents weaker in going and getting Knowles to run your defense as well. I think all of this comes together – for a team that I think is being underrated. I understand all the previous struggles, but Tim, you know my time with you on primetime, and I like to say it every once in a while, man, it doesn't happen until it happens, right? And I don't know why, because of past failures with different iterations of this team, I would think that this is just going to be the same thing here this year and just ignore the talent that Penn State has. And what I do love is our sliding scale when it comes to these things. He got a playoff win last year. Right. That you could say whatever you want about Boise. Yeah, right. Exactly. You can say whatever you want, though, with the one I'm focusing on is like Penn State. Right. Like, or excuse me, Boise State. You can say whatever you want about those teams. That's a win, man. And he did it. Like you said, he got two of them. Like, this guy delivered. So I think that this team is really being slept on. And if this were any other logo, if this was Texas, this Ohio State, we'd be discussing them as a no doubt contender. And I think people do believe in them in terms of the contender status, but I think there's a trepidation to take the full dive, but I am willing to do just that.
Yeah, I mean, those are all fair points. I haven't bet on or against Penn State yet. Do I have trepidation? Of course, because of the numbers that you pointed out and people have alluded to. But, you know, look at the facts and, you know, say what you will about, I wouldn't say our competitors. We all read everything that's out there. Phil Steele, Brett Ciancia, both of them ranked Penn State number one in their preseason poll. And to take them at 7-1, a number that, look, if they beat Oregon on September 27th, is definitely going to shrink. And that's the name of the game, right? JVT, you've been doing this long enough. At the end of the day, you want to try to get a number that's going to be better than when you showed up, than when you get to the playoff. And I think at 7-1, to your point, it's going to be better, more likely than not, when they get to the college football playoff. This is one of the eight teams favored to make the playoff. And I would be very surprised if Penn State's not playing meaningful football like they did last year in December and January.
Dude, I completely agree. I also think, too, when you look at what they did last year, because you're right with the two wins, my point being that, right, the SMU and Boise State not really viewed as such. They were very competitive and were right there to beat Oregon as well in that Big Ten championship game, too.
I think that was their best game of the year, JVT, to be honest.
Yeah, dude, right. Yeah. And they lost 45-37, but they were highly competitive. They were very explosive. You kind of really saw the legitimacy of what that team could be. And to bring a vast majority of that stuff back, man, like, we're going to sit back, and if they win this national championship, it's going to be somewhat obvious, right? None of us would really be shocked given the status of this roster. I'm not going to ignore a 7-1 on a team that I think rates as the best team in the country.
Well, and you mentioned the acquisition of Jim Knowles was massive. Look, it's kind of an old saying, but it does feel like if not now, when, right? Yeah. And if they don't get it done this year, James Franklin, I wouldn't say he's feeling heat, but there's definitely whispers there in Happy Valley. And it wasn't that long ago that people were calling for his head. And then he went out and he made a big hiring at offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead about a decade ago, pulled him from Fordham. Joe Moorhead now has moved on to, you know, well, he went to Mississippi State. Now he's the head coach at Akron. But I thought that was a huge decision. Then last year, he brought in Andy Koltunicki as their offensive coordinator, year two for him. I think that's a big boost for Drew Aller. Look, I think it comes down to this. Similar to the trepidation on James Franklin, I'm curious your opinions on Aller, because if you look at his biggest games, the numbers just aren't there. And then you think back to the interception, whether it's fair or not, that interception against Notre Dame is one that he's not going to live down until they win some big time games. So I think that's the big one. But I'll say this. They went out to the portal and they knew that their weakness was wide receiver, and they addressed that and then some. Getting Pena from Syracuse, I thought, was a huge add. Syracuse, a team that I bet under. They have lost a ton of talent. And then they also bring in, you know, Kyron Hudson from USC. So they definitely helped him out. But you lose Tyler Warren, who was kind of his binky a year ago. So curious final thought on Penn State from you. Just your thoughts on Drew Aller heading into this year.
Yeah, I think that I would understand anybody really not believing it. But, Tim, if you look at him statistically, he has gotten better every single year. So, you know, in his 2 years as a full-time starter, we'll call it, right? If you go back to 2023, PFF has a metric, for those who don't follow it, big-time throws. It's generally viewed as the throws that are in tighter windows further downfield. He had 12 in 2023, 21 in 2024. His completion percentage improved from 59.6% to 66.5%. Yards per attempt from 6.7 to 8.4. Average depth of target. He got way more aggressive. 8 yards per average depth of target in his 2023 season, 9.1 last year. You can see across the board that he's gotten better every single season. We know he's got NFL caliber talent. What if he gets better again this year, right? What if they're asking him to do more? What if he really does continue this trajectory that he is on? And the best part is he is brilliant. You know, you talk about the big interception. Overall, he's actually brilliant at taking care of the football. He's had a turnover-worthy play rate for his career of just 1.5%. That's incredible. He doesn't put the ball in danger at all. So if he continues on this path where every other metric is getting better and he continues to take care of the football, you can at least see the archetype of a quarterback that is set to come out and have his strongest season yet, given the indicators that we see in quarterbacks time to time. So I'm kind of buying in on that. Like, the path we're seeing right now for Aller seems very positive, and I am going to bet that it is going to get even better this year.
Well, the team that Penn State beat in the Fiesta Bowl, Boise State, a year ago, is back, and there's a glaring hole in that backfield by the names of Ashton Jeanty. He lives just down the street from us. He's a Las Vegas Raider, sixth overall pick. And you had me on Money Moves yesterday, and you quoted what I wrote in the guide, which was, I did not go into my offseason prep thinking I would have this bet, but I ultimately made this bet. And I've talked about it a little bit here on the podcast, and I think you think similarly. I don't know if you've made this bet, but I'm going to read what you wrote to open up the Mountain West. You said, Boise State has ruled over the Mountain West for a long time, and in its final year in the conference, the program is primed to go out with a third consecutive title. Despite the Broncos' success over the last 2 years, the conference has boasted some quality programs to push them. That does not seem to be the case this season. And I would agree. While it feels like it feels like Boise State, JVT, hey, they lost Ashton Jeanty, generational talent in Boise, Idaho. Let's fade them. The conference just doesn't seem to be on par with the Broncos this year.
No, not at all. Like, it's, you know, I'm with you. I came into this thinking, like, all right, who are we going to play? And then you look around, you're like, okay, well, UNLV's only got 5 returning starters. And Dan Mullen, we'll see what he does, but there's just not a lot to go on there. San Jose State has a nice schedule, but from like an actual power rating standpoint, I think there's still a massive gap between them and San Jose State. You know, we could talk about it. You know, I like Air Force, their returning production. But still, from a power rating standpoint, they pale in comparison to what Boise State's going to be. So it's one of those things where I do think the Broncos got worse. I do think, and I'd be curious your thoughts on this, I still don't know if I'm like a big Maddox Madsen guy. You know, when we got to talk to Spencer Daniels in the studio, I brought up, if you remember, that insane throw he made in the Mountain West Championship game against UNLV, where he put it where only his dude. I think it's one of the best throws I've ever seen. And Danielson even said it. He goes, I think that's like the best throw I've seen in person ever in my life. But if you look at some of the underlying metrics for him, Tim, turnover-worthy play rate's over 4%. That's huge. If he's asked to shoulder a little bit more load, if he's going to start to maybe put the ball in danger, and all of a sudden those turnover-worthy plays begin to turn into turnovers, I can see a scenario where this team is worse. But again, who am I really confident in against this defense that they have, which is brilliant? We had, I think, 3 or 4 members on the all-preseason team for the Mountain West media. Who am I really going to pick to upend them? They are worse, but so is the conference.
You look at the week 1 game against South Florida, the market is all over South Florida. That number is down to 7 now in Tampa, and I agree with it. I have not bet it, but I agree with that movement. I was curious how this market would bet it. Looks like South Point still has an 8 out there if you want to go grab South Florida north of a touchdown. but it doesn't matter, right, for the Mountain West. And that's why when it was a $1.25 at Circa, I kind of waited, hemmed and hawed. I said, you know, I just think -125 is too good of a price to pass up on Boise, because here's the thing, to your point, they play UNLV at home. They play Fresno State at home. They play Colorado State at home. Yes, they have that weird, tricky game against Air Force, but I like that it's in September. They don't play San Jose State. And you know this as well as I do. JVT, if Boise State's in the Mountain West Championship, which it would be a bit of a disaster if they weren't in the Mountain West Championship, whether they're home or away, they're going to be a favorite. So if you wanted to get off your -125 bet, I felt like I probably could do that. So more about Boise State, the running back position, the hole that Ashton Gentry leaves. You know, what I gathered from Mountain West Media Days, talking to BJ Raines, who covers the team, and talking to Cage Casey, their left tackle, they're maybe a little too bullish on the running back room. And I get it. You know, you lose Ashton Gentry. Oh, we really believe it. You lost the Heisman runner up. Let's pump the brakes. A dude that ran for over 2,600 yards, but there does seem to be a lot of excitement, not only about Malik Sherrod, the transfer from Fresno, but this kid, Sire Gaines, who I think they really like, but ultimately, you know, had an injury last year and is kind of an unknown.
Yeah, I'm going to be curious because the offensive line remains mostly intact. Ben Dooley, a guard from last year, was one of their big contributors along the offensive line that's not back anymore. But for the most part, this is the unit that paved the way for Ashton Gentry. But I noted in the write-up for Boise State, the one thing that really sticks out about Genty's profile outside of the video game numbers that we all know, he averaged 3.5 yards per carry after contact. Like this is something where you're looking at a team overall that can you get that same production, the same physicality from a Malik Sherrod or anybody like that? It's going to be interesting to see if that's going to be the case. But I'm with you. Like, I think that when you talk about this offense, it's really going to start with getting just some production from the running game. And I think they can. Like, I think they're going to be fine. But they really leaned on Ashton Gentry a ton. I mean, you and I, let's invoke a game that we saw together, right? We were in that suite at Allegiant. That was Ashton Gentry's worst game in terms of a yards per carry mark. I think he averaged 3.9, right? They still had to hand it to him almost every single play. And they were just relying on him. And I don't know if you do that with Sire Gaines. I don't know if you do that with Malik Sherrod. And so when that happens, going back to the thing that I brought up, what does Maddox Madsen, who oddly enough wasn't at Mountain West Media Days, what does that do for that passing attack? What does that do for Madsen if he's forced to do a little bit more? And I think with week one, when you're talking about that, I keep invoking, Tim, the game that they have against your Fighting Irish. I think we're really going to see in that game how much worse Boise is. They did go toe-to-toe with some big boys last year. This year, I don't think they're anywhere near that, and I think we're going to watch in that game against the Irish really how much worse this team got without Gentry out there.
Yeah, and that's why I haven't bet to make the playoff. I haven't bet anything else. I haven't bet their win total. I just bet them to win the conference because I think they're better than everybody, and I think ultimately when/if they make the conference championship game, they'll be a pretty sizable favorite. So let's get to the team that I haven't talked about a ton, and I want to get your thoughts here on this team, and that's Air Force, a team that historically has always been a thorn in people's side in this conference, and they had a very uncharacteristic down season a year ago. You're a big proponent, and I am too, but I always love the way that you like to sell high and buy low. And Air Force seems to be kind of a buy-low team. You know, this is a team that won 5 games last year. But the funny thing is, right, the opposite of 2023. 2023, JVT, they were a disaster down the stretch. They lost, as I recall, they lost to Army, Hawaii, UNLV, and then lost to Boise State. And then last year, they end the season on a big winning streak. So do we expect Air Force to kind of build off of that winning streak that wrapped up last year?
Yes. I want to, for your audience, really, I want to correct something I said. Malik Sherrod in his best year was 3.5 yards per carry. Boise State running back. Ashton Gentry, the number I meant to invoke, he averaged over 5 yards per carry after contact. So just to correct that. Yeah, for your audience, it was insane. All right. So for Air Force, you're right. And to me, it starts with what you're talking about there with that winning streak. Not only did they win their last 4 games, Tim, they covered their last 5. So Air Force really got a lot better down the stretch. And you tend to see that with service academy teams, right? Especially when there's a lot of turnover, when there's not a lot of returning production. As a season goes along, when guys get more comfortable in the system, you tend to see these service academy teams get better at the back end of the year. Air Force did just that. On top of that, you look at some of the numbers when you talk about the differences. For the season, it averaged only 4 yards per carry. The team did 229.3 yards per game. Over the last four games that we're talking about, rushing the yards go up to 302 per game, 29.3 points per game, and 4.6 yards per rush. Now eight starters are back for that unit. I trust in Troy Calhoun, who has been at Air Force, I think, longer than I've been alive. He has been absolutely brilliant with this team. And when you have returning production on an offense like this, I think that that can be a really dangerous thing for anybody in the Mountain West that they have to deal with. The defense, I'm not as high on. Like, look, there's some questions. They have a lot of different production that is missing here. Three secondary members depart. There's some questions up front. There's only a few guys coming back. I think they're going to be pretty average this coming year. They average 5.9 yards per play allowed, so that's not really great. So I think they're probably going to be floating around there. Maybe they get a little bit better. But this offense is going to be so much better. This defense shouldn't have to be on the field as much as they were last year. So I think this all equates to Air Force really making a push. And I took a feather out of your cap, if you will. And I thought at plus 650 to make the Mountain West Championship game instead of betting them to win, because I do think there's value in 16-1. Like in theory, there is a higher probability that they win. But I mean, where are you going to be at from a hedging standpoint if you face Boise State like you and I both expect them to be? You're not going to really be in a position to do anything with that. So I thought that was a better way to handle it. But I do believe in Air Force. I think they're a candidate to go over their win total. I think they're a candidate to participate in a Mountain West Championship game.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool market that DraftKings put out there to make the conference championship. And as we've talked about in the pod, San Jose State, I bet them at plus 220. It's now plus 180. A couple quick hitters to get out of here on the Mountain West. I want to hit on San Jose State because, we talked about this on Money Moves when I joined you on Wednesday. And I understand your hesitancy. It's not solely the schedule, but a lot built in to the schedule. It's my blind trust in Kennedy Mazzalolo, maybe similar to you with Troy Calhoun. But you have some questions, and I understand them, regarding this San Jose State team.
Yeah, I think it starts to me with overall, it's not the exact opposite of Air Force, but if you look at San Jose State from where they were playing last year, the back end of the season, they did kind of fade a little bit when you're talking about the actual results for this team. Walker Egitt is, I think, a good quarterback. The numbers aren't really eye-popping. 56% completion, 13 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. If you look at it, though, like to give him some credit here, PFF graded him as the highest graded passer in the conference from week six on. He also does not put the ball in danger, so that's always going to be a strength. I just wonder from a power rating standpoint, what does this look like for San Jose State? Because I actually don't view them as a particularly good team in comparison with some of their peers, in comparison with Boise State. But man, their schedule's so good, right? Yep. Like if you look around, you're like, holy smokes, like they got the right end of the stick in every single matchup. I think their trickiest spot when you're talking about Air Force and Hawaii in consecutive weeks, both of them make the trip to California to take on the Spartans. That's obviously a very beneficial thing for them. I don't think that they're particularly great, but I do think that there is a very favorable schedule in front of them, which leaves me conflicted because from a power rating standpoint, I think I have a few teams ahead of them in the Mountain West. But from a scheduling standpoint, it makes all the sense in the world that they would be a participant as well in the Mountain West Championship game against Boise State.
So people know, listening to this podcast, where we are on the Bows. VSIN, I would say, ultimately is a pro Bow network. We love Hawaii. We're obviously headed out there in a little over 2 weeks. Excited for that trip. I'm wearing my Rainbow Authentics hat right now. I bet over 5.5 wins, laid $1.44. It's now down to $1.42, terrible closing line value. That's at FanDuel. There's 6.5s out there. They flipped to the favorite week one against Stanford. You've got a little bit more of a tie to this program because your alma mater, Bishop Gorman, that is where their quarterback is from, Micah Elejado. Boy, when you talk to Timmy Chang about Micah Elejado, he lights up like a Christmas tree. He is so excited about Micah Elejado. It feels like JVT, I don't know if he sees himself in Micah Elejado or sees someone like Colt Brennan, but he seems to fit that run and shoot June Jones offense so well. And you know him from his high school days. What do you expect from Elejado and the Bows this year?
I mean, I think I expect a lot of good things for this offense. I'm very excited to see what this is going to be. He can join the list of famous Bishop Gorman alum. As I like to say, number one, I'll give it to DeMarco Murray. I'm number two. Joey Gallo can be number three. And then Alejandro, if he has a good season, maybe he can make it up to number four. But no, I'm really excited for this. It was a limited sample size, but he completed 70% of his passes on 82 dropbacks, 6 touchdowns to no interceptions, took care of the football. I think one of the more interesting aspects of his profile from the time we saw him last season, you know, we all got excited in the years with Braden Shager because of the Shager bombs, right? Like, he was a very adept quarterback at throwing those passes of 20 more yards downfield. Well, I think Alejandro can do that too. If you look at it, 13 attempts at 20 or more yards, he completed 7 passes, 239 yards, 2 touchdowns. So you're still going to have that explosiveness from last year. And their skill positions are in really good shape. Top two receivers are back. So is their leading rusher, I believe, in Landon Sims. Offensive line's in a good position too. So it's just like the perfect scenario for a young quarterback with a few plays under his belt to come in here and really take off. And Tim, you know what I'll invoke? I think it is a somewhat similar scenario to Devin Dampier, right? They're different quarterbacks, but we saw a minute sample size of Devin Dampier in 2023. In 2024, he really took off with a lot of returning production and had a very strong season. I think Alejandro's in the same boat where you get a little bit of run in some regular season bowl game contests, right? Then you come out, you get a full off season as the guy, and you can hit the ground running against a poor opponent like Stanford. I think this sets up really nicely for him in this offense. I think this is going to be the best one in Timmy Chang's career. I think I noted it in the rundown, or excuse me, in the write-up, where every year under Timmy Chang, you can complain about the record, but they have statistically gotten better every year offensively, and I think that they're going to continue that trend this year.
Well, and they were the best team ATS, or second best team in the country, I think, to Arizona State ATS at home last year. They were 6-1 ATS at home a year ago. The only team they didn't cover against was a putrid FCS opponent in Delaware State. And you get 7 games at home this year. You're going to be favored or a pick 'em against pretty much all of them, JBT. So can they go 6-1 at home and get over the 5.5 wins? I'll wrap on this. The rest of the Mountain West, the Pac-2, Oregon State, Washington State, you wrote up all of those teams, whether it be over or under, just a team that you're either higher on or lower on than the market would say right now.
All right. I'm really glad you brought this up because I'm curious to have your thoughts here because, you know, it's one of those things where I don't have a friend that I can talk to about this. So I'm really interested to see if you think what I do. Colorado State. So Colorado State's coming off of its best season in the Jay Norvell era. They won 8 games. They fell a game short of the Birth of Mountain West Championship. For those who haven't been to Tiger Woods, like mini putt golf thing or whatever out here, I can't remember what it's called. But I was out there last year watching their game against Fresno State, freaking out because I needed Colorado State to lose that game for some Mountain West futures. They ultimately did. But I am not a fan of this team coming into this year. I think that Braden Fowler Nicolosi is a very average to below average quarterback. You read early reports, by the way, in the summer, and there's like this kind of theme throughout where it's like, look out, you know, Taj Bullock, Akron transfer, like he's not going to be the starter, but you might see him. So it sounds like he might be able to push him in camp potentially here. The turnover at wide receiver is immense for Colorado State. And you go back to last year, Tim, for Colorado State, one of the things that I don't think anybody is talking about enough, their schedule eventually, by the time we got to the end of the year, sucked. When you look at who they played in the conference, they were absolutely abysmal. 6 of their conference opponents last season finished with a losing record in the Mountain West. They were picking off weaklings left and right. And now this year, 4 of their Mountain West foes have win totals of at least 6.5. They have to face ascending programs like Air Force, like Fresno State as well, so they might be better. I just don't buy into Braden Fowler Nicolosi. I don't buy into this program. There's some good things about them, but with a much tougher schedule, to ask this team to go under 6.5 wins, I think is a very fair ask.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I'll say this because I did sidelines for their bowl game, and you could take what you will about bowl games, but when it's 2 G5 programs going head-to-head, and that was a Colorado State program that had not been to a bowl game in 7 years, JBT, and their fans, I credit them, they showed up in Tucson for the Snoop Dogg Bowl. It was really probably the best atmosphere I've been to at a bowl game since I've been doing their bowl games for the past couple of years. And they laid an absolute egg. And Fowler Nicolosi, I've talked to some folks, to your point, you know, he's a big dude, super athletic. Yep. Not a great quote. I'll just say that. had him in studio. But yeah, I think they lost a lot. And to your point, right, where was Boise State a year ago on that schedule? Where was UNLV? This year, they play UNLV. Granted, they get them at home, but they have to go to the Smurf Turf. You have to wrap up the season against Air Force. Is that an Air Force team that's, you know, wrapping up the season on a high note? So I have not bet it personally, but I certainly don't disagree with your thought process there on Colorado State. It felt like they put a ton into last year, year three of Jay Norvell. Let's get to a bowl game. They got to a bowl game. And I'm not going to say they're sitting back and saying mission accomplished, but it does feel like this has the feeling, of a team that could maybe take a little bit of a step back. And let's look at their non-con, man. You have to play Washington week one. That is a very challenging game. I'm very high on Damon Williams and what that Washington offense could look like there. And then week three, you got to take on UTSA. So there's a strong chance they're 1-2 going into a game against Wazoo at home on September 27th. So I'm with you. I have certainly some questions regarding Colorado State. JBT wrote up the Mountain West, the Pac-2 as well, has his best bets in the VSIN College Football Betting Guide. JBT, as always, man, love picking your brain. Talk to you soon.
See you, man. Thank you.
There he is. JBT, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. Thanks to JBT. I'm Tim Murray. We're back next week right here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.